All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How are you? Are you okay? Is everything all right? I've been talking about this anxiety and just, I don't know what to tell you anymore. You know, it just manifests in weird ways, but God knows my cats have been part of my life for a long time, different sets of cats, and I just can never quite manage to relax around these goddamn cats, and I assume that it's just a projection of my larger inability to feel like I have any sort of control over the world, over my life, over anything else. I don't know. Why can't I just have normal, relaxing cats? Ever. So today I talked to Jackson Galaxy. You know, out of need, more than anything else. All right. He's a cat behaviorist. He was the host of the Animal Planet show, My Cat from Hell, and is the author of several books on cats. And I've been hearing about him for years. You know, people are like, you got to talk to Jackson. You got to talk to Jackson. He'll help you out, you know. I want a fucking miracle, man. Some people are getting on me saying that, you know, I can't, you know, rehouse Charlie Beans Roscoe. That, you know, it's my responsibility. He's my kid. Someone wrote, he's not your wife. He's a kid. But, like, I'm starting to feel like he would be happier in a single cat home with a lot of people. He just likes people. Yeah, I know he likes me. He's very attached to me. But he doesn't give a fuck about the other cats. And, you know, it's getting violent over here. And I'm out in the world doing all this press and doing all this stuff. Bad Guys is opening on August 1st. And my special comes out August 1st. They just picked up Stick for another season. And I'm like, I'm at the edge of a fucking nervous breakdown over here. This show is ending. A lot of changes. I'm sure that's having an effect. I'm sure that, you know, I'm processing that or not at a, you know, a fairly deep level. But I just want some peace in my house. And there's nothing but tension. There's nothing but feline tension. You know, and Charlie is violent towards Buster. Like, you know, I don't know that cats kill each other, but they're both beat up pretty bad. Charlie's got like a fucking gouge, a teeth gouge, you know, on his arm. And I feel little scabs on both of them. And I just want peace in the fucking house, man. I'm on edge. And I know, like, people are like, dude, they're just cats. You know, kids, like, they're just cats. You know, it'll resolve itself. It's not. You know, I guess I got to get more human contact. I don't know. But like, in my brain and in my life, there's just so much going on. So much of it is overwhelming. You know, so much of it is scary. And you just want the cats to, you know, be there. I guess if I wanted something to love me unconditionally, I should have got dogs. But they're even more responsibility. I just can't figure out how to, you know, ease this situation. You want it to ease with time. And it's just, I think all my cats represent a different part of me. Anthropomorphizing, maybe projecting. I don't know. But I think, you know, Buster is a pretty sensitive guy. You know, kind of avoidant, but sensitive and, you know, wants love. And Sam is kind of a doof. You know, he doesn't, you know, quite know how to receive the love. And I'm not sure he wants it, but occasionally he does. And he's awkward. And Charlie just, he loves people. Anybody who walks into the house, he loves them. But when I go away, it's just all shit hits the fan. You know, he's not shitting all over the place. But I get back and, you know, they get into these fights where, you know, Buster is screaming and pissing and shitting. And it's like a fucking nightmare. And I don't know if you people know my history with cats. I imagine some of you do. First cat I had was Butch. Female cat, Butchie. That was given to me by my second wife before we were married. And I loved that kitten. And I moved to L.A. with that kitten. I drove that kitten in a car with a plant that it liked to sleep on. I had a potted plant in the back because he liked to sleep on it like she gives a shit. And we're staying in hotel rooms and we're going through all that anxiety of driving a cat across country with a truck that broke down and Pennsylvania, an hour and a half outside of New York. And it, oh, God. And we got the cat here, and we thought we should get another cat for Butch. And so we went to this shelter, and there were all these sad old cats at the shelter, and I picked this one orange cat that seemed out of its mind that already had the name Boomer. And I realize now, you know, in retrospect, having dealt with ferals, that it was just a feral that ended up at a shelter. So very difficult to socialize. And he became a problem. He pissed all over everything when I moved into the house and eventually became an outdoor cat and eventually fucking disappeared, of course. Very sad. When I think about this, it's all sad. And then there were the alley cats of Astoria, saved a feral litter, Meanie, Hissy, Monkey, LaFonda, the mom, got them all fixed, had them all in the house. They destroyed the house. Somehow Monkey and LaFonda made the cut. I gave away the other one. The other one ran away. I lived with them for years, and they were half feral. But I remember when Buster came in, when Buster showed up on the doorstep, a few months old, maybe 2 months, freaked out. I think he was a kitten that got away. I don't think it was a complete feral. But there was a period there when Monkey was ailing. You know, and LaFonda was a mean, crazy, unpredictable cat, but I loved her. But Monkey was not doing well, and Buster, at the same age Charlie, would just try to beat the shit out of him. So I guess it's a thing, but it's very upsetting. Then there was Moxie, who ended up with my ex-wife, who she brought into the fold. Very smart cat, that Moxie. I don't know what happened to Moxie. I think Moxie ended up in Seattle. But, you know, Monkey and LaFonda, you know, ran their course, got kidney failure, and I had to put them down. And then I had just Buster, and it was just me and Buster for a while, and that was great. And then Kit knew a woman that she worked with who's, there was a litter at the grandparents or whatever, and then I end up with Stupid Sammy, who was a cute kitten. And now he's still a pretty good cat. He's got his own vibe. And then somehow or another, some feral mother had a bunch of kittens next door over here and was moving them around, and Charlie was under the steps, like 2-3 weeks old. And I thought, like, I can change that cat's life, and now I have, and he's a spoiled little fuck. But I love him. He's a good guy when he's a good guy, but I just, you know, there's no way to break up a fucking cat fight, and it's just a goddamn nightmare. If they're focused, if Charlie's locked in on Buster and I scare them apart, and then he'll just go chase them down again. It's just too much, man. And on top of that, you know, my brain is shredding. Like, I'm really not in a great place mentally or emotionally for a lot of reasons that are probably, you know, valid, but nothing, I'm unable to compartmentalize, and all this shit's raining down on me all at once, and it's like it's crushing me. I've been here before. I've been through a lot of shit. You all have been through this shit with me. But God damn it. It's just a drag. But I guess life is like that, right? And my problems as a guy with no kids and a bunch of cats is pretty low on the scale of things to really worry about. But it all fucking, you know, it all adds up. Anyway, this is where I'm at today. Where are you at? I'm all right. I'm spiritually sound. What am I even saying? My brain is on fire. Got to play music later. Been rehearsing. That's been a pretty good thing. You know, doing new things when you get to a certain age is a little daunting, you know, and I've been playing guitar a long time and playing with people on and off for the past few years, but never feeling the confidence, always choking on stage. And, you know, I just got to remember, dude, you got to put your hours in. So I'm working with a new group of musicians this time, and we're actually rehearsing. And we rehearsed last night for a few hours, and it felt pretty good just to do that process. But it's just so kind of scary to embark on a creative thing that, like, look, I play by myself and it's fine and I'm okay, but, you know, just to really do it and put the songs together and work them and, you know, make decisions around them and trying to get my voice so, you know, I can sing, you know, from my stomach with a certain amount of confidence. It's just, you know, some people, it's just like, well, that sounds like a fun thing to do. You know, it's not. I want it to be fun, But it's not going to be fun until I feel confident doing it. You know, it's the same thing when people tell me to, you know, play golf. I mean, come on. I mean, how much do you have to suck before you even get kind of good? So at this age, you know, you got to kind of gauge the amount of time, if it's even possible to get to a place where it's fun because you're good enough at it. I'm at odds with myself, and it happens. And I guess it'll pass, but it's been a few weeks, you know, where I'm just consumed with this. I can't get out from under the weight of the anxiety and the dread. And I was okay for a while. But I also realized today that another thing is like outside of the podcast ending, you know, I just dumped an hour, 10-minute special. I've just been working on that. I've been working on that for years, year and a half. And this is that feeling, you know, you're at fucking square one with a new hour. And I never know where it's going to come from. And I'm just sort of like, is that going to happen? You know, there's just that part of you that's like, let's just fucking hang it up. Just stop. It usually comes and I'm kind of, you know, I'm doing funny stuff. I'm getting up there and I'll let you know how it goes. I'm okay, man. I'm okay. And hopefully, you know, this talk with Jackson will level me off and maybe you can listen to it. Maybe you need this kind of help. I don't know. But before I bring him on. I'll be at the 92nd Street Y in New York City in conversation with Jim Gaffigan on Thursday, July 31st. That's for the premiere. We're going to be premiering a day early the special. So we'll watch the special and then Jim's going to talk to me. That'll be nice to see Jim. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for links to tickets. And then August 1st is a big day. That's when my special, Marc Maron Panicked, premieres on HBO, streaming on HBO Max, and that's also the release date for The Bad Guys 2. Also, the season finale of Stick is now streaming on Apple TV Plus. Did that just make you anxious, all that stuff? I mean, the work is done. Still, then there's the wave of anxiety from that, the special dropping. All right, look, I'm not going to drag you guys down. I'll be all right. And it was fun talking to Jackson Galaxy. You can check out his YouTube page and JacksonGalaxy.com. And this is me having a chat with the Cat Daddy. So, yeah, so I guess it's high time we met.
Yeah, man.
You're on those two. What are you on?
I'm on anything. I do a lot of nicotine.
Me too. Tons of it.
Yeah. I've got. Oh, you got the Zyn. I've got Breakers.
What are the Breakers? Oh,
that little dot.
Oh, yeah. I have. What milligram?
As far up as it goes. These are 8.
You do 8 Breakers?
Yeah. Is that a lot?
Look, man, I've been a nicotine junkie my whole life and on and off, but, you know, mostly on. I haven't smoked cigarettes in years.
Yeah.
But, you know, these, I was on real snus for a while from Sweden with the tobacco.
Yep.
But these things seem to be the best thing.
And what? How much is that?
Just 3.
Wow.
I don't know why. I don't know if I've become, you know, like weak.
I was going to say, you want to see who's the worst addict in this room? Like, so we got that and then we got the gum.
I've tried that, but that does nothing. How many milligrams is that?
That's 6.
Oh, you got 6 milligram gum.
Oh, no, I can't. I only get the highest. And so this is 8. I'll probably put a piece of gum in my mouth, except I'm talking. I vape. You vape too? I do.
Oh, so you're hardcore. But
I am so hardcore.
I just find, I think, you know, we're both sober. So, right? So that, you know, you're going to need something.
That's what I'm saying. No, you know what? You know, in the rooms, 20 years on and off, and the mantras, don't fuck with my nicotine or my caffeine and we'll get along just fine, you know, because I've given up everything else.
I you know, I've talked about it before with people that they don't seem to understand. Who was I talking to last night? I mean, I'm coming up on, wow, next month it'll be 26 in
Happy
a row
fucking birthday.
It's crazy, dude.
That's amazing. That's great. Really,
you're just, I think you're just a little younger than me. So, you know, we were at it.
Am I younger than you?
I'm 61.
Oh, 59.
Yeah, I'll be 62 in September.
Right on.
And, but the nicotine thing, I'm just sort of surprised because I don't know what it does for you, but it's an interesting drug because it can go either way. Some people get jacked, some people get dopey. Like, if I do a 6, you know, I got to sit down.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't touch me. I mean, I
really?
Yeah, no.
It's so funny because my brain's so fucked up because now I'm thinking, like, I got to get up there.
That's what we're doing. Listen, if you would have come said, like, I got this from Sweden, it's a 24, I'd be like, I'm in.
Well, dude, I got some shit upstairs that I got from Kreischer, and he got it from who makes the breakers?
Lucy.
He got it from Lucy. I've got a giant tin of about 500 of those.
Really?
And I'm going to give them to you.
Thank you. I'll take anything. And now, you know, everybody around me's, you know, the thing about all these years about harm reduction.
Yeah.
And, you know, the
to yourself.
Thing is, I would say it out loud.
Yeah.
Normally, the Times just came out with something the other day about heavy metals being in vapes.
And, oh, really? Yeah, I never did the vapes. I don't want to smoke things. I'll smoke a cigar now and again, and I've got strung out on those before.
I can't. Look, I started smoking when I was, what, 13?
14, me.
Yeah. And
why? Keith Richards?
Most likely.
For me, it was Keith Richards.
Most likely. Actually, I was thinking back. I was like, was it him? You could take in your pick at that point. Yeah, I mean, look, I was at 13, yeah, because I thought I was going to be a rock star.
Of course. So what, where'd you grow up?
New York, New York.
Right in the city?
Yeah. I'm from Upper West Sider, so that counts.
Yeah. So, like, what was the family situation? Did your dad grow up there? How do you end up in New York?
My dad was a Hungarian immigrant.
Really?
I'm first generation. Yeah, he escaped during the very brief revolution and Holocaust survivor. And,
really?
Mm-hmm. And came to New York.
You live with the Holocaust survivor thing? I mean, was he in a camp?
He was not in a, he was in a work
camp. A work camp.
And he had the worst of both worlds because he had the Nazis.
Yeah.
Then liberated. Then he got to be in a Russian camp.
Really?
Then escaped to Austria and then made his way here.
So was he older when he had you?
My mom was really young. My mom was like 19, 20, and then my dad was like 29, 30.
Oh, really? So he was a kid during the Holocaust.
He was. And you know what one of the craziest things is when someone starts to bring forward memories that they've been like, I can't do
this.
Yeah,
sure.
He was in his 80s coming up with shit that would blow your head. It was
really?
Awful.
Was he
awful memory.
Was he a fully cognizant in his 80s, or was it coming out in fragments?
Oh, he was still he was crazy Hungarian.
Yeah,
and he just he was a yeller, and he was right there with it.
Yeah,
before
great.
But he,
thing about the childhood came up.
Yeah, man. Like one quick thing, they grew up in, you know, kind of the projects in Budapest. And so there were all the apartment buildings. You have the common area. And there was fighting happening there in the middle of this building development.
Yeah.
And there was a well in the middle of the courtyard. So that's where everybody needed to get water. But there was fighting happening.
Yeah.
They would send kids like him out with a bucket.
Yeah.
Because they assumed that they wouldn't shoot the kids.
Right. But did they shoot the kids?
They didn't shoot that kid.
Yeah.
He made it. But, I mean, God, those stories like that, just crazy, crazy stories.
And then, you know, you're just an American kid going like, oh, I'm going to go down the village.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I actually, because I was a big kid.
Yeah.
So by the time I was like 14, I was 6 feet.
Yeah.
And so I was playing clubs in like the West Village. And I played CBs when I was like 16 because nobody was carding me.
And what band were you in at 16?
I was in my own thing. I was, you know, I started out as like, because what? I was, this is like mid 70s. So I was like total singer-songwriter dude. And then I discovered, you know, when the actual rock and roll thing happened, then I buy a Strat. And
so you were in, so it was the mid 70s. So CB's was kind of like, you know, New York punk was like happening.
Yeah. And by the time I got in there, so that was, that would have been 81.
Oh, so 82. It was a little behind it.
Yeah, but it was still, I mean, the scene was really great back then. But we got caught up in this thing where there was, you know, the pay-to-play thing where they would tell you to come. And the musicians union came down on us one time screaming at us in the street about how we're like ruining New York music because like we were going in there because they would do that thing where you'd go in. If you bring in, 200 people,
sure,
you'll get a real gig that pays you money.
Yeah.
So we played them all. I mean, I played, what was that one? Trax was the one that like, Trax was around for a long time.
I remember Brownies.
brownies.
That was right on Avenue A, I think. It might have been later. You might have been done with it and gone.
I was in Upper West Side, too. We were scared of the Lower East Side.
Really? But that's where it was all happening.
Yeah, yeah. No, by the time I was in college, then, you know, I mean, it was funny. I can remember the day I discovered Sonic Youth, and I was like, oh, well, now I know how to play guitar.
Oh, right. So that's what I was missing.
Four strings and one note.
Sure. And you invent your own tuning.
Oh, it was great.
But when you were a kid, it was mostly like just you and a guitar?
Yeah.
And just solo?
Yep. And then I hooked up with another guitar player in high school who, he actually became a pretty well-known jazz guitar player, which is when I knew that I would never be a good guitar player.
I struggle with that. What does good mean?
Good means
you mean a virtuoso?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like three
like
chords.
Like West Montgomery kind of shit.
I mean, were you trying to do that?
I was trying to figure myself out at that point, but the thing, what it did was it pushed me into being a really good lyricist and... Yeah. Inventing tunings.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, before Sonic Youth, it was Joni Mitchell. Joni Mitchell's tunings. Right. No, but I'm saying in terms of tunings.
There's a big gap there for everyone else, but
distortion. But also, I mean, she led the way with like crazy tunings.
Yeah. I don't fuck with them too much. I got that Les Paul Jr. tune to open G and the top strings off to do the key thing.
The key thing, yeah.
But I never, I don't know, man. Yeah, I've been playing my whole life and I never really played with people, so I kind of kept it a hobby. But now I've been trying to learn how to play with people. And it's
good
a little.
Luck with that.
Well, no, it's okay. But like, I'm not disciplined. And the idea of repetition, like I like things like happen now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay if it's sloppy, man. We just got to own it.
Yeah.
But like I'm working with some real kind of like, well, we got to do it like on the record in terms of the structure. And I'm like, we do?
Are they like real musicians or are they?
Well, they're rock musicians. And I've been
as opposed to real musicians.
Well, I mean, they're people that do the work, you know, and when you're, I'm good enough, but I don't play with people all the time. But I know they're behind me. They'll carry you.
Yeah.
You know, if you're messy. But I kind of want to, now that I'm kind of easing out of this, I'd like to spend more time playing music. But I don't like my craft is comedy. And my craft ultimately evolved as a conversationalist. But music has always been my hobby. And once you got to put the hours into, to be proficient, in a real way,
right?
At this age, it's sort of like, it's no fun.
I hear you, and for me, it was really weird because I remember my dad is the one who said it. I was trying to pull, like the top of my show would say, "I'm Jackson Galaxy."
Yeah.
I think it was like musician by night, cat behaviors by day, or whatever. The thing is,
when was this?
That's the top of every show said that.
And way back, you were a cat guy.
Oh no! I mean, way back. No, I mean, like when the show started, which was
okay. So you were out once you became sort of popular as the cat guy. You're like, I'm gonna do some music too.
No, I was trying to make it as a musician
before
that, and my dad was just like, listen, you're gonna have to make a choice at some point. You're either doing one of these things or the other, and somehow that got into my head, and I didn't write another song after the show started, and so now I'm still looking at, I'm doing the same thing you're doing. I'm looking at my guitars.
Yeah.
It's haunting me, you know.
Because I didn't have the dream, they don't haunt me.
Oh, that's good.
You know, I never aspired to be a pro musician.
Oh, I was.
You were all in?
All in.
From high school?
From the time I was 9 years old. I picked up a guitar at 9 years old. I was like, this is who I am.
So when does it start? Like, so you're playing out, though. You're making a living. Did you cut some demos? Did you make a record?
The great thing is, thank God it was all before, like, Bandcamp and all that shit, because I don't want that music out there.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it was good. It's just at this point, kind of dated and whatever. But I was living in Boulder for.
Wait a minute. So how do you get from New York to Boulder?
Oh,
When did you hit the wall? What's that story?
It's like the slow 80 crawl. So I went from New York. Went to college in Ohio.
Ohio?
I went to Oberlin College.
That's kind of a groovy school, right?
It was totally groovy back then. And I was not as rich. And then we went from that. I went to grad school at University of Iowa.
That's fancy. For what?
Theater.
Really?
Yep. Go figure. I'm telling you.
So what'd your old man do?
I mean, he did a lot of things that once The Sopranos came out, I was like, oh. When you know that like every birthday present you ever had fell off the back of a truck, you're like, oh.
That's... He's a connected guy?
He became that way. I mean, he didn't speak any English when he first got here, but he wound up running a cookie factory. Like he owned a cookie factory.
For the Russians?
I don't know who the hell for, but I'm telling you, he didn't know how to bake a cookie to save his life, you know? And
but was it a legit cookie factory?
It was. He actually, like, he provided all the cookies for, like, all those supermarkets up and down the East Coast.
Okay.
And, I don't know how it happened. All I know is that he did what, they had that saying about Hungarians that they're, like, the only people who can get into a revolving door behind you and come out ahead of you.
Oh, interesting.
That's him.
But you know? So you guys did all right.
Yeah, I mean, okay. It depended because he was a cash guy. Like, I think he paid for my college with cash. I'm not even kidding. And then and then some years we didn't know. But so from I went to Iowa, graduated there.
Well, so what? But the theater dream. So you're doing music as a kid. When do drugs get happen?
Yes, I would say it was not till I was like 15 that I was starting to get high.
Yeah,
but. And drinking, but, you know, and I kept it, whatever the word is, until Iowa was when I started to spin out a little bit.
Yeah.
And then by the time I got to Boulder, which was after that, then all bets were off.
So what'd you learn in theater school? You did 2 years?
How not to wait tables. I had no theater dreams.
But you went to graduate theater school.
That's because, like, honest, this is how it happened. Like, I started in theater because I was writing music for theater, and that was fun.
So musical kind of, like, for musicals?
No, like scoring them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
I hate musicals. And then, so I did that, and then one day somebody sees me walking across the stage, and I'm big whatever, and big grabbed me, and I started doing that. And then...
What, acting?
Yeah. And then there came this moment where I, you know, some theater teacher in New York and in Oberlin was like, you got what it takes. We'll prep, you know, auditions so that you can get into grad school. And I didn't get in anywhere. But like 2 weeks before the school year started, a director friend of mine calls me. She's like, I'm in Iowa City right now, which, by the way, I didn't even know there was one.
But
And I was like, and she said, we can get, if come here and audition. If you get in, free ride. And, you know, you're a TA and whatever.
Well, they needed people in the program?
Yeah, totally. And so I got in and... spent the next 3 years in Iowa.
They got a pretty heady, you know, highbrow writers program.
Yeah, man, and their playwriting program was amazing.
Yeah,
that's all actors are in that place. It's just we're just
doing the plays of the guys.
We might as well be keys on a typewriter. Yeah.
And, so, right. So you were doing a lot of workshopping for new playwrights.
And then I was a huge rebel. I decided I wanted to be a performance artist at that point, and we broke away. There's three of us. We like broke away from the program and. Made terribly subversive, terrible art.
Yeah,
and,
in Iowa.
In Iowa.
You didn't take it back to New York or anything.
I wanted to. Like, I mean, my you know, my dream was to be, you know, part of, like, the whole scene with, like, Liz LeCompte and Willem Dafoe.
At La Mama or at the Worcester Group or something.
Yeah, the Worcester Group, man. Those guys were, you know, seeing those guys live was... Yeah. Blew my head apart.
Was that guy the guy that had the theater on the on St. Mark's, Foreman? You know, he did all that crazy.
Yes,
and they were all kind of very rapid. There's a lot of things going on.
God,
always.
What was his name?
It was like
Richard
it was,
Foreman.
It was, yeah, I think it was Richard Foreman.
Was it Richard?
Yeah,
yeah. Those guys were crazy.
Crazy, man.
I saw Annie Sprinkle when she was doing a lot of performance art, and she would like walk around.
I saw her too.
Like,
it was great when she'd invite the audience to view her her cervix. With
I was
a
there.
Speculum.
She I just, saw Annie Sprinkle's cervix.
Yeah, she just sit there splayed open at the edge of the stage she after the show.
She was brilliant.
I loved her.
She was brilliant.
It was great.
And that whole scene was just the most like primal form of expression.
Yeah.
And actually, when you think about it, it actually did inform the rest of this, whether it was performance in music or whether it was performance art or whether it was theater, whatever, you learn the human condition inside and out. And then applying that to animals, for me, was pretty easy.
Really?
Yeah. It's just the same thing. You're
but
just,
you when know. You sort of like, so after you graduate in Iowa, when do you like, you know, hit the wall and stop using?
I got sober in Boulder.
Yeah. Oh, so you go from Iowa to Boulder. For what? Why Boulder?
Well, because Boulder at that point actually had a halfway decent music scene.
Sure.
And the Fox Theaters in Boulder, which is an amazing
venue. I've played that place. I like it. Yeah.
God, it's amazing.
It's nice. Right size.
And it's also, I don't know if you know this, the guy who designed the sound system there is the same guy who did the Dead's Wall of Sound. So the whole stage is lined with subwoofers, and it's truly orgasmic when, like, you're playing on that stage. You don't even care about the audience. It sounds so good.
Yeah, I mean, did I play the Fox in Boulder, or is there a Boulder Theater?
Yeah, Boulder Theater too.
Yeah,
beautiful old place.
Yeah,
yeah. There's that place.
I feel like that's where I usually play. Is that smaller?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's, I mean, honestly, like, the scene there was great. And between that, I was thinking there, Chicago or Austin, and Boulder just...
Boulder. And you're in, like, mountains. It's pretty.
I went there sight unseen.
Yeah.
I had never seen it.
Were you running?
Yes, I was. And I knew that I could probably get away with whatever there.
Were your parents, like, concerned?
Yeah.
Is your mom still around?
No, she lost her when I was 16. But my mom, who I was very close to, my mom, and she was she was my world, and she was like, you know, when you know you hit bottom, when your mom, and we're talking Upper West Side Jewish mother, flies to Boulder to sit you down and cut you off.
Yeah,
that's when you know that. And I still went on for another year after that.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know, I mean, it was, it's as good a place as anywhere to have a breakdown and to get sober, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's interesting. So they're concerned. How Jewish did you grow up?
Oh, in New York, at least, we call them submarine Jews, where, you come up for Hanukkah, come back down again, like that kind of
high holidays.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, sure, fast if you want to. But,
sure.
Yeah, that was it. But I still went to, like, a Jewish day school. I went to
Bar Mitzvah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I was just telling this story the other day. Me and my brother's 4 years younger, and at one point, I don't know. I
just
was
the,
like,
two of you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe I was 10,
yeah,
and he was 6 at the time, and we had a serious discussion about it. We'd like, okay, we know what we're going to say. We go into our parents' room, they're laying in bed, and we're like, listen, Mom, Dad, we have to tell you something. We don't believe in God. And my mom doesn't even skip a beat. She goes, that's fine. You're still getting bar mitzvah.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And that's New York, man. And so we went through all that, and... I'm so glad that I grew up there.
Oh yeah. It's like, you know, everything's there. I envied people because, you know, my family's Jews from Jersey and we ended up in New Mexico, but I had,
wow,
all my relatives were in Jersey. So like when I was 14, I'd spend a month at my grandma's, take the bus into Port Authority at 14,
that's
just
amazing,
to wander around. And my mom was very much into art and she was an artist. So anytime there was big openings at MoMA, we'd go. So I always felt very connected to it and loved it. But you do have a resilience when you grow up there. I think that to grow up with that much diversity and that many people around and on top of you, and there's a kind of beautiful sort of shell you create.
And, you know, the thing is, you're a part of a shell.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's so weird about New York is that we communicate by yelling.
Yeah.
We're can be gruff as hell.
Yeah.
And yet you feel protected. You're walking down the street,
totally,
you don't feel that threat.
Never. You know? And, like, I've always noticed that about New York, and I've said it before, that, like, if something's going down, someone's going to step up and go, what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
That guy's in trouble? Does anyone know how to help this guy?
And, right.
And it's dealt with.
Yeah. And they could be saying, like, what was the thing someone said? That, like, the difference between, like, New Yorkers and Angelenos is, like, the difference between nice and kind. Like, you know, here, if, like, you fall in the street, somebody stops their car, are you okay? And then they keep driving.
Yeah.
And in New York, they pick you up while they're calling you a klutz and an asshole.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And,
right. But they make, you know, people step up and they're, you
totally.
Know, in New York. And I was always, like, appreciative of that. And I never felt safer.
Yeah.
In anywhere else in New York.
I mean,
because there's always someone right there.
And it doesn't, my most favorite thing is just to get lost in New York.
Yeah.
Just walk. You don't know where you're going.
Sure.
And, you know, it was weird. Last time I was home, I had one of those moments. I was having a weird moment in my life. And I just walked. And I wound up, you know, near the Trade Center area.
Yeah.
And
you hadn't seen the memorial?
I hadn't seen the memorial, and I hadn't seen any of the development.
Yeah.
All of the houses and the stupid shops and whatever. It's just the whole thing is unrecognizable. If you would have dropped me there, I never would have known I was in New York. You know?
Yeah, that memorial's pretty heavy. I think they did a good job with that.
Totally.
I mean, it's like, it's kind of devastating. It's powerful. And the new Whitney's stunning. Over on the water.
Uh-huh.
It's great space.
And all those, like, little, have you seen, oh God, what was the name of the something island? looks like a Dr. Seuss Island, like
Roosevelt Island.
No, no, no. That's on the other side. No, that's the last thing from Dr. Seuss. No, it's off the west side, and it's called Something Island, and it looks
It's like an art piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. Such a great place. And yeah. Look, if I could have afforded it, I would have gone back and lived there, but.
Yeah. So you get to Boulder, So in order to get sober, as we know, if you follow the rules, you have to put that first above anything else. Now, was the move to Boulder sort of like a bottom and you're like, I've hit the wall?
No, I wasn't even aware that I was in the bottom until, to be completely transparent, like I went to my first meeting because I was trying to get laid and she was like, okay, but I just want you to come to a meeting to see how I live.
Yeah.
And I went, and then, they had the check boxes in the back with the pamphlet.
Yeah.
Am I an alcoholic?
Oh, yeah.
And every single one of them, except I hadn't gone to jail, and that was it. And then you start to realize that you got a problem. So it wasn't, I was in Boulder for 10 years.
Did that person help you get sober?
Yes and no. I mean, she did, but she also was kind of crazy. So, I mean...
Because a woman got me sober.
I mean, it was helpful.
Because I wanted her.
There you go. We share that story. That's cool.
Yeah, and she brought me in, and I held on. I was married, unhappy, left my wife, latched on to her, and burned it down, because you're not capable of
fucking
anything.
And that's the thing. I mean, and my first sponsor was like... You can't make her your higher power. That's not who your higher power is.
Or just use them to, I understand that idea, but I don't know that I understood the notion of a higher power. I just, you just lean on them too much. Then all of a sudden your codependency comes out and you just exhaust them with your fucking insanity.
And then you really get sober,
The codependency and, adult child business.
Yeah,
it's like those are the heavy ones.
I'm still working through that. I mean, I'm almost 60 years old.
I can't. I'm fucked up, dude.
I mean, but I think that there's something to be said about saying that you're this overgrown child or whatever. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
It sometimes excludes you from making grown up decisions, which I am learning. But
yeah, I'm a childless man. I'm 61.
Weird as hell.
I've been married twice and still no kids.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely something not resolved or fixed.
Right. Right.
But, I think it becomes the effort is try not to be a toxic fuck and don't hurt other people.
Totally. Yeah.
Control yourself, learn. As I get older and, with the program and stuff and whatever I learned in it, I don't go a lot, but it definitely fixed my brain in a lot of ways.
Yeah, totally. And the same thing. I have periods where I go, I need program. I need to be in program before something happens.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing is you've made it 26 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I seem to break at 10 years. Every time I hit 10 years, I break.
Oh, yeah.
And so now I'm just back to a year.
Oh, really? How long were you out for?
One night.
Oh, fuck, dude.
But it was a hell of a night. It was a long, crazy thought I was going to die night.
Yeah. Not worth it.
No, man. It was the first time that I was cognizant of the fact that, wait a minute, this isn't really, really high and good. I'm going to die.
Oh, yeah. Right away, right?
Would you
have an hour of good and then just some dying?
I had the second it hit me, I was like, I'm in trouble.
Good times.
But it's always there. It doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel compelled. The weird thing is if I feel compelled towards anything, I was sort of a Coke booze guy. And but the only thing that is mildly compelling as I get older. It's like, there's so much weed around.
I know. I was just saying that, you go to the thing about avoiding New York in the summer is because it smelled like piss. Now it just smells like piss and weed.
And weed is everywhere. And here you just go to the store.
Mm-hmm.
And you just buy this weed that, when we were kids, that would have cost $300 for a bud that looked like that.
In Iowa, we were picking it out. It was ditch weed. We were picking it out. And, all seeds and nothing else. And, I am actually glad because it's such a consumer culture now and I will buy things.
I
can't go anywhere near that stuff.
No. I don't think about it. I've been working around booze my whole life. So when you're in Boulder, so you get sober the first time?
Yeah.
How do cats figure into this? I mean, did you give up the other dream?
No. I mean, I was there as a musician, and that means that I was broke all the time.
Yeah.
And so I worked a bunch of awful, shitty jobs. And after the fifth awful, shitty job, I saw an ad for an actual shitty job at the shelter, which was like picking up shit, and jumped on it. And it was within weeks, literally weeks, that like all of a sudden everyone was like, you know, the cats like you.
Yeah.
And they would, I would just stand there and they would just come to me. I would eat my lunch. They would come up to me.
Yeah, yeah.
They started calling me Cat Boy, even though I knew nothing.
Yeah.
And I figured I should probably learn something.
Yeah.
Especially since we were in a really desperate place back then. I mean, we were killing 10 to 12 million cats and dogs every year at that point.
Yeah, see, when I met my girlfriend, you know, she was at work in the shelter here. She's a big animal person. And it just, her heart couldn't take it.
She works here?
Now she's at a doggy daycare, but she was at Pasadena. She was at Best Friends for a while.
Oh, cool.
She was, you know, I mean, she's an animal welfare person.
Right.
Right now she's got, you know, two kittens from a feral litter down the hall, and she's got, you know, three of her own cats, and now she's got a dog, and it's kind of crazy over there. But she lives for it.
Mm-hmm.
But the shelter became too heartbreaking.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how I made it as long as I did. I mean, I was at that shelter for 10 years.
Yeah. And what did you learn when you said you wanted to learn? You know, how did you start?
I mean, look, there was nothing. You know, to be completely honest, it's still that way. Where
in terms of cat behavioralism?
Just cats, period. And I mean, you know, outside of like their bones and their organs.
Right.
But I mean, we spend all our time on dogs. We spend all of our knowledge and wanting to know around dogs. And so in terms of writing, me just getting a grip on, all I cared about was this. I get a cat that comes into the shelter. They're scared or they're aggressive or whatever. We're going to kill them in about 2 hours. What is it that I can do in the next 2 hours that will keep her alive till tomorrow so that I can keep something else going so that I can eventually get her adopted?
The deal was when you get a feral cat or like any cat?
You knew
that they were unadoptable because they were not socialized.
I knew because we were the ones who had to kill them. So yeah. I knew if I couldn't put them on the adoption floor and we were...
Well, what determined that?
If we couldn't put them on adoption?
In terms of...
Either they were, like, if you know that that cat is going to sit in that cage for months because they're not going to face their audience. They're not going to come out. They're not going to take those three steps to the front of the cage. They're just going to hang out in the back. So... That was reason enough back then.
Right.
And if they were, you know, there's two sides of the same coin. They're both sort of cat anxiety. One goes all the way back. One comes forward and tries to kick your ass every time you go through. Both of those ends of the spectrum would be plenty of reason. So the scared ones, assuming they weren't feral cats, you know, back then we were doing stuff that now is sort of codified. We call it TNR now. Back then, it was like, you're feral, I'm putting you back out there. You know, you don't belong here.
And release, you mean.
Right. But back then it didn't have a name. It was called me stealing cats and putting them out in the trailer park.
Right.
So, yeah. There's that. They were neutered, though.
Yeah.
We got them neutered.
Well, you got to do that. When my first batch of cats, you know, I had a lot of my radio voice was sort of developed around my journey with these feral litter from behind my apartment in Queens.
Right.
Because I didn't know they were feral. And, you know, once they're eating on their own, you know, it's game over in a lot of ways. Yeah. So I trapped like four of them and brought them into my apartment. I trapped with a shoebox.
Holy shit.
And they just destroyed my apartment. And then it just became this whole journey. Like they just destroyed it.
Yeah.
And they were howling at their mother in the window. And like, I didn't know what to do because then like I couldn't get them out because they didn't know where to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it just became this like journey with these four monsters. And, you know, I was reaching out to cat people to get them fixed and to get their shots.
And this was in New York.
It was in New York in an apartment in Astoria.
And
I was on the mics at Air America. And I was just, you know, having.
Right. God, I forgot about
that. Yeah. And I was having to deal with this. And, you know, I didn't know. Like, I grew up with animals my whole life. And I think at that point, did I have Butch yet? I think I had already lost. Like, I had a cat. My first cat was given to me by that woman who got me sober, who I was involved with. And that had a congenital heart problem. I'd moved out here in 21, and it died, you know, less than 2 years old. It was terrible.
Oh,
and we got another cat, Boomer, came with that name from, you know, a no-kill shelter. But, like, I thought he had the most personality in the shelter, but it turns out, now I know, he's feral.
Yeah. Yeah. That's personality.
Yeah. So, you know, I had him for years, but this was a different batch. And it just got very crazy. You know, yeah. Like I tried to find, you know, I got them all fixed and I gave one to the bodega or the little store across the street. They wanted a mouser, but it just disappeared immediately because it was crazy feral.
Yeah.
And then some person took another one. But I had two of those cats for 16 years.
Holy cow.
You know,
and did they ever tame up for you?
A bit. You know, I think they did, but they're just a little twitchy. But yeah. But I've grown to realize that because I'm not innately... I think, you know, genetically a regular cat person, I'm kind of a brash. And I would always wonder, like, why are my cats always, you know, nervous and fucked up? Because I'm talking to them, like, what's going on? You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're also feral cats. And I think it was something that people struggle with this constantly now in terms of, like, who is who and who should be outside and who shouldn't be outside and all that. But back then it was really... guerrilla work, I mean, back then. So, we're talking, what, 93, 94?
So you're learning tricks?
Mm-hmm. And also just trusting myself. I mean, this is where it came into me saying, I know how to watch people, make a world with these people, and live in it. And, and you can do the same thing with animals. And I had that head start that the cats liked me.
Yeah.
And from there, it was just, you know, what can I do that's going to just make them braver? You know? And started working with a dog trainer because I had nobody else.
At the shelter?
She was a trainer who came to work in the shelter.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, listen, you got to teach me something because I got nothing. And, and she taught me clicker training. And
for cats?
Yeah. Yeah.
How does that work?
It's the same as dogs. But it's just...
What is clicker training?
So clicker training is like the way a lot of dogs, or most at this point, are trained. Yeah. So it's the idea that they do something you want them to do. The click signals that something good's going to come, which is usually a treat.
Yeah.
And then it's like a Pavlovian thing pretty much after that.
Uh-huh.
It actually came from... first, it was pioneered with chickens, and also carrier pigeons during the wars, spy pigeons.
Yeah.
And then this woman, Karen Pryor, started using it at SeaWorld with the dolphins, and then went to dogs, and then finally cats.
But you can do that with cats?
You can do it with anybody. You can do it with us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's we're motivated to do something. We all learn the same way.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So with the cats, it was, you know, I had a really good treat. I wouldn't feed them for a little bit, so they were a little motivated, and then teach them that taking the step is a good thing to do. Turn around is a good thing to do. The story that I always tell people is that the first one of them, I got her done within, I don't know, an hour, where she goes from her head to the back of the cage, head to the front of the cage, three steps to the front of the cage, hand through the bars to do a high five through the cage. So then when the adoption area opens and people come in, she's like trying to high five people.
Yeah.
First sucker is like, oh my God, she loves me. She wants me. Right. She's calling to me.
Right.
And that was it. You know,
Got
her home. And then it just became like, I think I had the advantage that I got to write my own book, literally, because I just didn't have, you know, strict rules to have to break.
So there was no, because look, I've had, you know, cats, you know, my another girlfriend of mine who was a painter, she like managed an entire feral community that she moved from one place to her new place.
Amazing.
And they just kind of came and went as they wanted to. And, and some of them were more social than others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she taught me some stuff, I guess. But I've had cats a long time and it's all kind of instinctual. But now I've got, you know, these issues. Like most of my cats kind of level off and they're all right. I don't, you know, like I didn't know that in order to get them to be kind of warm, you got to kind of put them on your lap and get them used to it.
I mean, it depends. And I think one of the things that I love about cats so much is that the rules only apply so much.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever it there is, they, in an evolutionary perspective and to this day, make a choice every day how much they want to engage.
Yeah.
You know, they are self-domesticated. We didn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like in terms of our relationship to them, to me, it's a whatever works kind of thing.
Sure.
I mean, obviously they're energetically incredibly sensitive, so yeah. they don't go for the like, and they're not going to take orders no matter what. You know what I mean? yeah. They're not. You could yell all day. You could say sit all day. It's never going to work.
And, well, a lot of people are surprised that my cats know their names. I guess some people have a problem with that, but all my cats know their names.
Yeah, and your guys seem just like they are. Totally centered yeah. and present and yeah. out and about. And I told you, like, I've got three cats, two of them yeah. you would never know exist.
Interesting.
When you first come over to the house. But I just don't believe in, like, if you're a lap cat, you're a lap cat. If you're a, like, I'm going to hang up by your toes at the end of the bed, I will be just as, you know, honored, you know.
Yeah.
I just don't want you being scared and small and under the bed. That's yeah. my only thing.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I've had a cat like that until they get fragile. But, like, you know, Charlie, who is the current problem, and all my cats, like Buster in my old house, he just showed up and started eating the food I was feeding the ferals outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was, like, maybe 2.5 months old. But he wasn't really feral. I feel like somebody got him mm-hmm. as a kitten.
Yeah.
And then he got away.
Right.
And was out there for a bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, then he ate some plant. He ate a bouquet of plants when he was like a year or so old and went into renal failure.
Oh, wow.
And there wasn't lilies in the bouquet, but I think there must have been the pollens. But I, you know, at that time, I'm like, what kind of idiot is going to spend 10 grand on a cat? And there I was with this year-old kitten.
Yep.
You know, saving him at the emergency vet.
Yep.
And now he's like 9, and I think he's only got one functioning kidney, I found out, really.
Yeah.
I always wondered, but he's all right.
Yeah, he seems.
Well, you didn't meet him yet.
Oh, he's the one who's the yeah. older one.
And then yeah. then Charlie, the problem.
He's great.
He is great.
He's great.
But he's from a feral litter from next door.
Is he?
Yeah, and she was moving him around.
But he's the same thing. He's completely like people.
Well, I got him, she was, they all ended up under my steps back here mm-hmm. with the mother, and she was moving him again. And yeah. she had moved them all except for him, and she's probably coming back from him, but I got him. At like 2.5 weeks, and my girlfriend, yeah. you know, bottle fed him.
Right.
And now that's what I got.
That's it. You know what?
Spoiled brat. Spoiled.
And I also, I say this because I think that there's people in like the sort of more educated community who yeah. would like say I'm completely full of shit, but I bottle babies,
yeah.
you know, and,
yeah.
and he's a bottle sure. baby. They have completely, like, they are so much more human than they are cat.
Kind of,
right? And he is. That
yeah,
like he's a bottle baby.
Yeah,
did he sure. like? Did he do the thing where he like holds on to you? Does or her or like, just like he needs to be touching. He needs to be near you guys.
Well, there was a bit of that, and then Sam, the kind of dim one, he came from a litter that a friend of hers had. You know, it was I don't think it was a feral litter, but he wasn't wild either, and he always looked nervous, and then he kind of turned into this. Very odd cat. That's the weird thing about cats is like they're only going to be who they are.
Who they are, right.
And then you're going to have to just deal with that.
You make them the best version, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah. You got to figure out what who. But here was the thing is that Buster was alone with me for a while because Monkey and LaFonda had passed, the ferals from Queens. And he used to beat up on Monkey when Monkey was sick,
yeah.
you know, because he was this little kitten. And then when I brought Sammy in before Charlie, Buster just beat the shit out of him, just made him a total punk. And so, like, they're like this gay couple, and Sammy's just yeah. totally all about Buster.
Yeah.
You know, he owns him.
Yeah.
And then I bring Charlie in, and Buster doesn't want to even deal with it.
Well, what makes Charlie an asshole?
Because he does, you know, he likes to start shit. You know, I've got that catio out there, and yeah. if I'm going to close it, he'll jump out there, and he won't come in.
Yeah.
Just to fuck with me.
Right, right.
But the bigger problem is he's an interesting cat because during the day he does his thing, you know, and then, you know, but he's pretty independent of the other cats too. But at night he'll always sleep with me mm-hmm. and he'll get up in my face
that's
and everything.
That's the thing. That's the bottle baby thing.
Yeah, yeah. He'll like, you know, fuck with my face.
Yep, yep.
But then during the day he's like, you know, just, you know, you stay in your place. I'll let you know. But he's always in my shit. Here's the problem with Charlie. And it's a real problem because I'm
the problem with Charlie.
Yeah, I'm locked in with these cats. Is when I go away, You know, he's gotten aggressive towards Buster. So there's three males in there.
Yeah.
And my vet says that's weird because they usually all get along, but this is not what's happening. You know, Charlie is outside of those two. And there's always a little spatting between them. But when I go away, he'll shit. He shit all over the house once. And he beats up on Buster to the point where I get home and they're scared. There's hissing. And it's just a fucking nightmare. And, you know, the vet was like, well, I usually prescribe Prozac. So I tried that, but I couldn't take it. I couldn't, I don't like Prozac for me. And when I put Charlie on it, you know, he just like turned into a different thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I stuck with it for like 2 weeks, so I can't do it to him.
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, there's a place for psych meds with cats 100% as much as there is for humans. There's that. But with him, I mean, all you had to do is say like half of that, and I'm like, oh, I know what's going on, you know? And so he...
Separation anxiety.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just you leave and he loses his center.
Yeah.
And then he spends the rest of his time trying to find it. And things like shitting on the floor, for instance, is I'm going to leave a mark here because I need proof that I exist. You know what I mean? That
Well, he was getting colitis. So it was just like diarrhea everywhere.
Poor guy. Yeah, that's just stress. And that's not, and I think I'm not throwing shade on anybody, but I mean, that's not what you would use Prozac for.
Yeah.
And I think we start to throw around psych meds because we just got to figure out how to get cats to live with us.
But it makes them a different cat.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, ideally it shouldn't. I mean, the cats that I recommend medication for are mentally suffering. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, like, he's definitely.
For real mentally suffering. And he is
just
yours.
My cat, yeah.
And I mean, do you have a sitter who comes over?
Yeah, she comes over, you know, and feeds them, and they know her, and she'll play with them and stuff. And but the thing is, like, I've tried a lot of stuff, you know, and usually he kind of loses it three or four days in, and he starts beating up on Buster, which he does anyways. But like, I think I've been able to manage the shit problem with a probiotic, you know, a calming probiotic that I'd given before, and I got him on Zilkine. Which I don't know if it really works.
Yeah.
I've got Fellways all over the fucking house.
Those don't really work.
They don't work.
No.
And, you know, now we've got the music going.
Yeah.
I've got a timer because I'm preparing to go away.
Was that jazz that was happening for a week? There?
No, it's like new classical. So it's more ambient thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't.
Charlie's like, I don't want no George Winston shit in my house.
Yeah, too much. Make me too anxious. But I did get, you know, I did have her give me a script for gabapentin. And I'm just going to tell the sitter to, like, look, if he really starts to fucking, you know, if Buster, if there's hissing and it's, like, really fucked up, you know, just give him that in the morning.
I mean, I think that, when are you leaving?
Sunday.
Oh, it's about to happen. Okay.
But I was just away, and now I've been home for a few weeks, and they're totally fine. And I think I seem to know what's going on.
Yeah,
I'm informed, and I was going to bring him with me. But then it's like, you know, whether I drive or whether I have to walk him through fucking security, I've done all that shit before.
Oh, yeah,
and then bring him to a new environment.
You got to take him out to TSA and all that. You know?
God, dude, I did a whole bit on that with the old cats because I never traveled. And that was the feral one.
Yeah.
And
you had to travel with them, TSA?
I had to get them out here. And one of them, LaFonda, was a fucking monster. I mean, she was like scary cat. And just to get her in the cage, like I had to wear gloves or she was going to fuck me up.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I'm like at TSA and I didn't know the first time I did it. They're like, you got to take her out and walk her through. I'm like, you guys don't even fucking know. This cat is fucking nuts.
Yeah.
We're all in trouble, you know.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, you know, I scared all of them. The TSA, everyone was like, just stand back, you know. And like I got her out and I didn't realize.
Oh, my God.
All they wanted is to get back in the box.
Yeah.
So, like, she was, like, freaked out, and I got her through, and I got her in the box. It was fine.
Oh, you're so lucky.
What, have you heard horror stories?
Yeah. I mean, didn't you hear about the cat who wound up in the bowels of Kennedy for, like, 3 years?
Because it got away from someone walking?
I don't know if it happened during TSA, but it was just the cat wound up just in the bowels. That shit happens all the time because all that had to happen while you were online was somebody behind you sneezes, makes a big noise.
Yeah, and she's
gone.
She would have been gone.
Now, what people don't know is that you can actually request a room.
You know, I heard that somewhere.
Yeah, I figured that out a couple of years ago, too. But I think that there's stuff. I would tell you that, like, look, if you got to do it this time, you got to do it this time. But There's things I think that you can do to pass. It all depends on the person who stays here when you're not
yeah.
here. Does she stay here?
Well, sometimes, but usually it's just for a while, you know, and she's like, she works at the Humane Society. I mean, yeah. she knows these cats and yeah. she'll try to tire them out a little bit and play with them and, you know.
But here's the test that I would say is that if she stays over,
yeah.
when she stays over, does he raise hell or not?
Right.
If he doesn't, then we know what's going on.
What? It's just.
He like I was telling you about the bottle baby thing, yeah. he gets his center from human energy.
Yeah.
And so without it, he's trying to make the rules. You
yeah.
know what I mean? It right. suddenly turns into Lord of the Flies in his head because he just doesn't, he needs structure
right.
that's dictated by you guys.
Yeah.
And I'm not like, I'm not dismissing your actual relationship.
Yeah.
But I do think that if you have routine, she picks up that routine,
yeah.
hand the baton, she does exactly that. You just try that for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And it works, then at least we know.
Yeah.
And all he needs is somebody living here and he doesn't need
right.
Benton,
right. You know? Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's, it's amazing.
I figured that was it. I didn't know how the territorialism worked, but the idea that if he's anchored to humans and then all of a sudden he's like, you know, I'm the guy now.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to like, you
like
know.
If you think about the fact that like cats, they define their well-being by, you know, how satisfied the raw cat is in the back, the ancestors
yeah.
in the back of their head, and ownership of territory is all of it.
Yeah.
So you are telling these guys, and especially him,
it's mine.
I own it.
Yeah.
Your kingdom too.
Yeah.
But I totally own it.
Yeah.
And he feels okay with that. You leave and all of a sudden, I call it cat Napoleon syndrome
yeah.
where I don't own anything. I'm freaked the fuck out because I don't own anything.
Yeah.
I'm going to over-own anything.
Yeah,
I'm going to
yeah.
beat you up three times, even though you said, uncle, I'm going to crap here, pee here,
yeah.
keep the barbarians at the gate. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Right.
I got a job to do here.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's why I think that, like, socially, I think it would help him. Because, I mean, I meet him, and he seems totally cool.
Oh, no, totally.
Totally normal.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
friendly as hell.
Yeah.
Comes up. He wants to just
yeah,
rub
yeah.
all over.
Yeah,
He's
yeah.
great, man.
Yeah.
But I that's the thing. I mean, it's the paradox of, like, you know, I do say thank God for meds. Meds are great. Meds
yeah.
have saved so many lives.
Yeah.
And at the same time, then we cross over to this place where we're like, well, I want you to fit into my world.
Right.
So I'm going to medicate you.
That's yeah, when it gets, I can't do that. You know, I tried it with him, but I just like I could feel that like it was almost like he knew he was being fucked with.
And he yes. And there's that other thing that's, you know, when you we give cats things that sort of sedate them a little bit.
Yeah.
Their historical job is to be on the job,
yeah,
you know?
So they're pushing
and
back.
And you go, they put them off to one side. They're going to fight twice as hard to get back. You
yeah,
know?
And be mad at you.
Yeah.
And, or yeah, and can't,
you meaning anything, right?
Yeah, and yeah. it can't, and it becomes impossible to give them medicine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I felt that this was probably, you know, I kind of had a sense that this was the issue. And I imagine if I drove him out, it's a long drive, but I imagine, like, you know, within a day, you know, he'd just be happy that I was there.
I think he seems to me to be a great travel cat.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to, like, train anyone to a harness before?
No.
Oh, that'd be great for him.
What, like a walking?
Like yeah,
walking?
Like a walking harness, yeah. And then, you know, that way, first of all, whenever you take him out of TSA, you've got total control over him. But the other thing is that, like, he just seems like someone who would want to explore, but with you.
Huh.
And
Sammy's, like, the dumb one seems to be the more adventurous spirit out of all of them, like the
oh,
one
really?
That I can't figure out. Like if I accidentally leave the door open, he's like, he doesn't bolt, but he'll just wander out.
Yeah.
He won't run,
yeah.
but he's always the one that's sort of like, all right, so what's
he's
going
like,
on?
I'm not dumb. It's an open door.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just going to see what's on the porch.
Like I took him to the vet the other day and it was kind of a shit show, you know, getting there. But once, unlike the other two who were kind of skittish, you know, out of their element, you know, once he got in the examination room, he was like, no, this is okay. You know,
that's great.
Around.
I mean, you can tell your guys are well-adjusted. I think that your experience of having to compromise with a feral being
yeah.
for all those years
yeah.
taught you that you have no control.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
all
yeah.
it's all a complete illusion.
Yes.
You are
with
powerless.
Cats.
You yeah. are powerless over cats.
Totally.
And you know, other things in life. But that's why I think for me, like, cats still hold like this beauty and this reverence for me because I will never have them figured out.
Yeah.
And they refuse to be. And I think that that's one of the most beautiful things on the planet.
And what's interesting about cats is they're all so fucking different.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had I've had Butch, I've had Boomer, I had Moxie for a while, then I had LaFonda and Monkey, and now I've got these three. Like, they're all different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're all, like, there hasn't... And I say this about all animals. I mean, I got five dogs, too, and they all... And I had chickens in the house and all that, and I learned so much from them. They force you to be humble, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's no room for hubris in the world of cats.
Yeah.
And there's just, you will get your shoes shit on if you try to do that stuff.
Charlie,
you
know? Like, when he's fucking stressed or he gets the vibe that I'm splitting, he has, for some reason, he likes to pee in sinks. So I have to cover the sinks.
Yeah.
But, like, he'll literally, I saw him get into a frying pan while he was looking at me and pissing it.
Yeah, that's some stress, man. That's hard. I mean, I have one of my guys will pee in the suitcase.
Yeah.
That you leave the suitcase open, they know what that means.
Yeah.
And they just pee in the suitcase.
Oh, God.
Got to London. I was flying to London.
Oh, you didn't know?
And all of a sudden I'm like, nah, I know that can't be on my clothes. You know, you have that like that little whiff of something and I know there's no cats in this hotel room.
Yeah, yeah.
And you crack that thing open and it's like, now you're running down to Primark for suitcases before you have to leave.
Yeah.
So they made sure I knew they were still with me.
So I guess I gotta just figure it out because I get so like stressed when I'm waiting to hear back from who's watching. I'm like, what happened?
Yeah. No. I mean, I think there's some easy things I think that we can do to just make him.
The
make
other guys aren't like that.
No,
because they have each other.
They do. You know what he would like?
What
he would like a kitten.
Well, that's what Kit says, and I'm like, they're not gonna.
She's right. Yeah, but if you think about it the other way around, it's a whole lot better to get his stuff out than a laser toy.
Yeah.
Like, it's an actual live thing that he can go to town on, and they'd be like, okay, what else? You know, what else you got?
Yeah.
As opposed to the other guys who are like, back off. Yeah. I don't want you anywhere near me.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, I think he would love a kitten. And between me and your girlfriend, like, within 20 minutes, we can have a kitten here.
No, she's got one.
Oh, that's right. She has one.
There's one that's unclaimed right now.
Right now?
I know.
Oh, my God. But you're going to be gone for a bit.
A week.
That's nothing.
No, I know.
How old is the kitten?
Kitten's like, I think the kitten's like 2.5 months.
Perfect. And then by the time you get back, it's almost 4 months. I mean, these guys age fast.
Yeah.
So by 4 months old, they have no agenda. They have no like territorial bone to pick with anybody. He just wants to have fun. And I'm telling you, trust me.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're going to be like, you call me up. You'd be like, take a fucking kitten.
I got a kitten for you.
I got a kitten for you. But I mean, and especially right now, I mean, we're having such a rough summer.
Really?
Know? Oh, yeah. Kitten season is always rough, but L.A. is its own brand of...
It must be insane here, because in New York, you have the winter, and, you know, you'd see ferals, and, like, if after the winter, you see them again, you're like, holy shit, good job.
Yeah, good job.
How did you
made it?
Where the fuck were
and
you?
It is great. There's great rescue. There's great organizations throughout the country that help out. I mean, and that's all I'm doing now. I mean, now that I have the time to devote back to it...
Yeah.
I'm just back to being a shelter guy. So it you get a real view of what the sort of the national condition is.
Yeah.
Now's not a great time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, everyone's scared about their own self.
Yeah.
And then you're like, what, I got to save animals too?
Yeah, but it seems to be like if you're that person, like, I know it keeps my girlfriend sane.
Yeah.
Totally. That, you know, that animal welfare is a pretty pure form of service.
Yeah, true. It really is. And I think that we... You know, post-pandemic, animal welfare went back like 10, 20 years, you know, and we're climbing out again.
Yeah.
And so for people like me who grew up in the system, it you get a lot of PTSD from it because all you have to do is walk away from a shelter where you were in charge of both life and death.
Yeah.
And you come back into that, that is not something that you want to be a part of.
Yeah.
And, but I also, I'm aware of the fact that I now have this sort of, whatever it is, standing or whatever it is, and that I can do a lot with it, and I'm happy as hell to do it. It's I love shelter animals, but I love shelter people and rescue people, and they're my sort of tribe, and that I feel like there's like a karmic debt that I'll be, you know, paying off. But I think right now it's one of those moments where depending on where you live. And LA is just one of those places. Yeah. Where it's actually worse for dogs right now than it is for cats. Yeah, it's pretty bad for dogs.
So what is the most common problem that you have that you encounter with people and cats?
I mean, I don't think I'd have a job without, you know, pee. You know, pee will drive humans to very rash decisions very quickly.
Yeah.
And blood will do the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's like those hyper, cartoon cat-like behaviors that I think keep me in people's heads. But also introducing cats, I think that's something that arguments among cats seems to be something that people are always bringing me in for.
Yeah.
In fact, it was really funny. I don't know. Don't ask me why I did this, but the early on, whenever I don't Google myself ever, but if you did, like when the show first started, and you type my name, you know how it finishes the thing.
Yeah.
And it was like Jackson Galaxy Gay, and I was like, okay, well, we'll take that for. Now it's a little more regular. Now you get to Jackson Galaxy Introductions.
Yeah.
So that I think has become more of a thankfully, people are more concerned with their cat's introductions.
But
introductions, blood and guts, pee and poop.
Yeah.
That pretty much keeps me, But I think the cool thing is, I think one of the coolest things is that Gen Z-wise, men are the thing now. That in terms of spending money on cats, the male demographic is
really
going up, which
New young generation.
Isn't that amazing? I mean,
what is Gen Z? How old are they?
I mean, they're in they're all coming to me. They treat me like their cat grandpa, which is good and bad.
Yeah.
And, early 20s,
no
mid 20s. And they are, it's amazing because, you know, that masculine thing that rejects all things feline.
Yeah.
They're crossing that border, which is so great for rescue also.
Yeah.
Like we have a new audience who are going to get cats. And I think that's amazing because we're like breaking that stereotype. And so that's great.
That's good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause I think I'm against the grain as far as a cat guy. And, I definitely speak out for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I bust on dogs a little bit, even though I grew up with many.
Yeah.
But I do find that you know, it takes a certain person to deal with the cat's independence. And for me, it's perfect because, like, dogs with my life would be too high maintenance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
but now I've got Charlie.
I think
whatever.
It's basically, do you want to be obeyed or do you just want to live together? I think that's the thing that it comes down to. And cats are just not for you if you want to be obeyed. And I know I'm being very blue sky and idealistic right now, but I think in terms of the human condition, if we are getting to a point, especially the males of the species, where we can accept the mysteries of the world a little bit better and not think that we can actually orchestrate the show, that's a really good thing, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I feel is there.
Oh, good.
Waiting.
Well, that's good.
And hopefully.
I'll decide on a kitten later.
You mean tomorrow?
For me.
I'm not going to leave you alone.
Well, I'm going to be stressed.
Oh, it's going to be great.
You have four of them.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah?
Yeah, man. I promise. It's going to be amazing. You didn't know you were in for this, huh? You think I was just going to fix some peeing problem?
I've had peeing problems. I think I've dealt with almost everything that, you know, cats can dish out, really.
But you know what we're dealing with now, though? And
what?
This is the only thing about getting a kitten. Is that it's hard to look at a kitten and not think of your own mortality at our age.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's a tough one.
That's going to outlive you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one's rough. When you have to start making, like, living wills and shit because you're
for
just like...
cats.
Yeah. Because, I mean, how many more kittens am I going to bring in my life? I'll foster them. But
yeah.
I don't need to be reminded every time I look at them. You know?
Yeah, that they're going to live for maybe 20 years.
Yeah.
And what we got?
I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I know. Dude.
I think the kitten's a great idea.
All right, buddy. Well, it was good talking to you.
It was great talking to you.
Thanks for doing it.
I'm so happy to finally be here.
There you go. I think that was helpful. You can check out Jackson's YouTube page and JacksonGalaxy.com. Hang out for a minute, folks. Hey, listen, on Monday, I talked with director Ari Aster. And for Full Marin subscribers, I did a Mark on Movies bonus episode about all of Ari's films, Hereditary, Midsommar, Beau is Afraid, and Eddington. There is something about, you know, the, because I'm going through it now, the executing the full arc of anxiety fantasies. Mm. And I think that in doing that in Beau, you know, I don't even know if you necessarily disarm them, but you can sort of splay out the kind of, renegade, malignant imagination of an anxiety-ridden brain.
Yeah, it was like if you take those imaginary things that people catastrophize and make them all real, right?
Yeah,
so like he has this situation where he has to run out of the house, right? Because he feels like he's going to die from the medicine he just took and he has no water. So he runs over and he's trying to get the water. And while he's getting the water, the entire neighborhood goes into his house to party.
Yeah.
No real reason, but they're just in there having a party. And then he has to sleep on the fire escape while they're in there. Like all of that stuff is presented in the movie as though it's really happening, even though it like feels to us like, well, this must all be metaphorical, right? This didn't actually happen
I think what it is that maybe, and I'll ask him, the experiment was to sort of like in any given moment of anxiety about something your mind is generating, why not just go for it?
Yeah.
And illustrate all of them.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, what is the worst thing that can happen? What if someone breaks into my house? What if many people breaks into my house? What if they start spray painting and partying in my house? How will I get them out of there?
What if when I take take a bath, there's a guy hanging above the bath?
Yeah. It's like, yeah. I think it was a sort of a kind of poetic meditation on the horrors of anxiety. Yes, to get that episode and every bonus episode we do twice a week, subscribe to The Full Marin. Just go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. I just did some sloppy groove. Here you go. We'll be right back. Boomer lives, Monkey and La Fonda, Cat Angels everywhere.